Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 60. In this episode, we're going to talk to Paul Schaeflein about Microsoft's cloud identity and Azure AD and how it relates to Office 365, as well as some developer topics related to identity, recorded live November the 26th, 2014.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Andrew Connell.
And I'm Chris Johnson.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
Good morning, CJ. How are you doing today?
Not bad, my friend, not bad.
It's a little awkward. As I explained a couple episodes ago, we're recording three, I guess, intros to the show all in succession on November the 26th that are all getting released over the next 3 weeks. So that's the third time that I've said, how are you this morning? And it's only been a course of about an hour.
Hey, it's always nice to be asked. You know how it goes.
Exactly. I see you're wearing the same shirt for the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, totally. It's reuse, baby.
See, my shirt used to be white. So it's been 3 weeks. Now it's looking a little green.
Yeah, it's looking a little dirty there. You got to scrub that up.
Hey, so this episode is, again, like the other, like the last one we did with Jeremy Thake. This one is with a friend of ours named Paul Schaeflein, who lives up in Chicago, Illinois. And I grabbed Paul at the SP Live 360 conference in Orlando on November the 20th, 2014. And Paul and I found a little spot outside the conference, sat outside, so you'll hear a little bit of background noise from being outside. And the topic at hand is about Microsoft's cloud identity. And that specifically means Azure Active Directory, and how it relates to users and apps and all of that stuff. Paul and I dug into the conversation. We talked a little bit about started from scratch. I played the role of someone who doesn't really understand this stuff, which was not too hard to fill that role. But what is Azure Active Directory? How does it work? How can customers take advantage of it? And then how does it tie into Office 365 identity? And then finally, we started moving on to the topic of apps and also some of the developer topics, like what is the ADAL library and what is Katana and what is Owen and what is OpenID Connect and OAuth 2 and all that kind of nuts and bolts kind of stuff.
Ooh, all the good stuff.
It's good because I learned a lot, but it was really appropriate for me because I know, and I guess it is for you as well, because you know you guys have recently released the Office 365 APIs for Office 365. You went RTM with those back in, I guess it was late October, early November, announcing them in Tech Ed EMEA.
Yeah, that's it.
And the first part is that you have to first authenticate. I guess it's kind of, to me, the APIs are really three pieces. You first have to authenticate with Azure AD. So you create an app in Azure AD, and then users got to have permissions to use the app and obtain your token. And the second step is using this thing called the discovery service to find out where your endpoints are. And the third step is then go to use the APIs. And that first piece is the part that just identity is always tough, I think, to most people.
It's always been that kind of that thing that everybody needs to do, but nobody really understands.
Yeah, you get just enough to get it to work, which, you know, is the scariest thing too, because you need to know just enough to get it to work. And then you get it to work, but there's so many permissions and knobs and buttons and stuff that you can tweak that if you don't have it just right, while your stuff may not work, but even worse, it may work, but you may leave yourself open to a hack or a compromise.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah, it's the plumbing everybody needs to really understand. And unfortunately, it's pretty complicated still.
It is. It is. It's one of those things. I mean, I've been doing a bunch of work around the 365 APIs recently, working on the Microsoft Virtual Academy training that your team's got in Office Dev and contributing a bunch of content to it. And the authentication piece is by far the hardest piece to understand because it can be really tricky between single tenant, multi-tenant, having to have client IDs and secrets and having the right app IDs set up and the right permissions set up and the right reply URL set up. And there's using the right libraries and how does Owen relate to the ADAL? And oh my goodness, it is tricky.
Acronym soup.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
Hey, but Paul does a great job of helping navigate some of this stuff. So hopefully people will really get something out of this episode with him. He's a great guy, really nice guy, and knows his stuff in this area. So I learned a lot.
Yeah, I'd say it's a great interview. I know I did the interview, and I'm not saying it's a great interview because I did the interview, but I finished up, we wrapped up the conversation, and the second I hit stop on my little microphone, I looked at it and I'm like, well, I won't repeat exactly what I said, but I was like, holy man, that was a freaking epic interview. It just, I learned so much out of it and got a better idea about how stuff worked. So yeah, it'll be really good. And I'm looking forward. Paul's going to take the episode. And before we publish this, or by the time everybody hears this, Paul said he'd listen to the interview and he's going to grab some extra links to add to the show notes for people. So of not only stuff that we talked about, but some additional references. So hopefully this and the transcript that comes out of this will be really beneficial and a great resource to people going forward.
Yeah, no, definitely.
So, hey, it's a long interview. This is one of our longer episodes. It's going to go for a little bit over an hour, I expect. So this is Paul Schaeflein and I sitting down in Orlando, recorded live November the 20th, 2014. All right, this is Andrew. We're doing another interview at SP Live down in Orlando in late November or mid-November, I guess, where it's actually warmed up a bit from being really cold. I'm sitting here with Paul Schaeflein. Paul, how are you doing?
It's not really cold. This is wonderful weather based where I'm from, but I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Paul's from Chicago and left the relative temperature of 9 degrees.
9 degrees the morning I flew out, yes, absolutely.
So we're all complaining about being like in the 40s and 30s here, Fahrenheit for everybody. And Paul's like, I don't know what you're talking about. This feels great.
I'm loving it.
Cool. Well, hey, thanks a lot for coming down to the conference. I've got a role here of being a bit of a one of the organizers to help organize speakers and everybody. And I know we've talked a lot about having you come on down for this, and you were down last year as well. And what are you talking about at the conference this week?
So this week, this year at the conference, I'm focusing a lot on taking your apps that you've written, right? There's been all kinds of talks and blog posts and everything about how to write a SharePoint app. What do you do next? So a couple sessions and then a workshop on now what? Let's deploy it to production. What do we have to think about as we move forward and go from there?
Cool. And you're doing a workshop too, right?
Yeah, a workshop I call the Apps the Next Level, which covers on a lot of different topics, deployments and certificates and logging and security. But I couldn't do a talk without security.
Oh,
so,
of course.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, so just trying to give people things to think about as they try to mature their apps.
Cool. Yeah, I did a workshop on Monday where I did kind of like an overview on what the SharePoint development story looks like. And we started with like, some people had no experience with SharePoint at all. So it was like, here's a farm, here's a web app, here's a site collection. And then went into, here's the solutions, don't dismiss them right away, don't go to them right away either, and then here's the app model and here's the APIs, and just kind of get people up to speed on it. It was funny, at the very end, I said, you know, if we have time, I'll talk some about identity and security and stuff, but I'm not going to do it in like just a few minutes. We need a good hour of time at the end. And I got a good number of questions where we could go in a bunch of different directions, but I get to the very end and I finish like about 10 minutes early and someone's like, let's talk about security. I'm like, not in 10 minutes. That is just cruel. It will scare the hell out of you.
Exactly.
So let me just throw some terms at you. This is things you need to go do some research on.
Yeah, exactly. But it's interesting. You're talking about like the developer story, which is changing almost monthly, right? Yep. But what I'm talking about is stuff that we were talking about, you know, when I started in the computing environment, you know, 20 years ago, some of these concepts that have gotten out of the consciousness of people. So it's just kind of a refresher. So that's, but yeah, it's hard to keep up with all these changes. I mean, credit to Microsoft for innovating, but it gets hard.
It really is. It was. I had a conversation with somebody today about developing training materials. I know you and I both got a lot of experience doing this, and how in one sense it's really frustrating because as you develop the training materials, things change underneath you all the time. And so the stuff has always got to be revved. But in another sense too, it's kind of nice because you don't just have this massive investment of building training materials every 3 years and then you got to go back and rev them again and you've got like no billable hours for, you know, 2-3 months while you're rebuilding it. Now it's just constant little updates all the time. So I prefer the more frequent updates because then you don't have these massive changes that are coming at you and trying to figure everything out. So
Right. You know, there's something new and it's one piece that you can identify, but it's still, I haven't got my head around and my enterprise clients haven't either. It's like, you know, we deploy an app, we're not going to touch it. Mm-hmm. For 3 years was plenty fast enough in some instances. So it's kind of interesting dynamic I'm seeing out there. What do we do? You know, that's all great, but now what?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
so. It's tricky. So just for everybody too, we're recording this outside. So I've done one or two interviews down here and I've recorded, this is the second one. The first one we did it inside, but during a dead time during the conference, so nobody was walking around the hallway. It was pretty easy. We tried the hotel lobby. We tried one place sitting outside in classic Disney. There's music playing everywhere quite loud. So right now you may hear a rumble in the background. That's actually the Hulk roller coaster from Universal right across the way. That's we're picking up the grind of it going around. So yeah.
And AC didn't want the sound of a screeching girl, so I'm staying off the roller coaster.
Hey, same here, man. Same here. So what I wanted to talk to you a little bit about today in this episode is mainly around identity and around, I guess, the Azure story around identity specifically for the cloud listeners out there. And this goes in so many different directions. In the past, we've done a couple different episodes where it's a topic that we've had a lot of questions about. Like, for example, BI comes to mind. And there's a lot of questions, don't really know the landscape. And we just kind of worked our way all the way through the landscape of like what we were looking at here. Kind of want to do that in this episode as well. Okay. So we'll talk about what identity and Azure. We'll talk about how it interfaces or how Office 365 can take advantage of it. And then also how developers can take advantage of it in the different stacks. I'm going to serve the role as the listener who doesn't really know what they're talking
okay.
about.
Okay.
So I'm going to ask some questions. You may look at me and say, you really don't know that. But the other advantage is that there are a lot of these things that I really don't know. And so I can play that card and you won't know which one I'm being honest with when I'm playing the
role.
There
you go. Excellent. Yeah.
So Azure Active Directory, right? So just in a nutshell, what would you say, what is Azure Active Directory for those that know what Active Directory is in Windows, like on their machines today?
Yes. So if you are familiar with Active Directory and you're running a network, it's almost what you want it to be, but not quite. So, and it's typical of most companies, they have a brand and or name, a service mark, and they want to use the same thing. So they say Active Directory, and so I wouldn't call it necessarily Active Directory as you experience, but it is a cloud-based directory, and that means you can put things in there like users and groups or roles and applications and all kinds of typical things you'd expect of a generic term directory. Like we had in Novell had a directory and Microsoft has a directory and Oracle has a directory. So it's really good in that regard. And it's got all the cloud goodness that Microsoft's bringing to the table wrapped around it. So
okay.
That's where I would start it, saying it there.
All right. So then like some of the differences between what we'd have on-prem, what we'd have in the cloud. So no group policy in Active Directory, Azure Active Directory.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So group policy would apply to objects that you'd see in your directory. Well, the only objects you have in the cloud are users, groups, maybe applications. There's no concept of an OU. There's no concept of a computer object. You can't do a custom object, right? When you extend Active Directory to support Link or Exchange, you don't extend Azure Active Directory. You have a set of properties and that's what you have. And the idea really is that I can use it for authenticating people on a cloud service. That's their initial target right now. Right? Who knows where it'll go in the future, but that's generally what we're talking about. Just the users and groups and roles bit of who are you and not necessarily the full feature of everything in my container that you'd want.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah. So, and then one of the things that it gives us that we don't have in Azure Active Directory is the ability to do like applications as well, where we can set up like true, like it's kind of like it's Azure's way of doing OAuth 2 for application identity and stuff, right?
Right, exactly, right. So, you know, when Active Directory was invented, we didn't have the concept of authenticating outside of our organization, and applications really were just consumed things, right? And then that kind of makes sense. So as they go to the cloud, Microsoft needed a solution, if you will, that would say, hey, I want to be able to authenticate somebody and not necessarily open up my whole internet, you know, my network to the internet. So that's why, and in that regard, you can see why not all the objects are there, because it's really just they're trying to do that. And so it worked out natural for them to say, okay, this is going to be our OAuth provider that people are going to want to see.
Gotcha. And that's the part we'll get into in a minute, but that's the part where we can see like Office 365 taking advantage of that for its OAuth model and everything.
Right. But when you take a step back, and we can talk more about this, it's not Office 365 specific. It's really just some concepts that we can apply to the internet at large or services at large, and it kind of fits into that solution as well.
Right. So Office 365 is taking advantage of this offering, but if I just do a standard ASP.NET MVC app, I could take advantage of it that way.
Right. So, and that's two part of it. So, I mean, a lot of people are going to come at this from the approach of, I just need to authenticate a user. Mm-hmm. And so I don't necessarily need tokens. I don't need to have the concept of an application identity. I just want to make sure that whoever hits this page is someone who works for my company.
Right.
And so IIS has always done the silent login with NTLM integrated. It just works for people. But now when you're up in the cloud, that doesn't just work because of firewall rules and all kinds of security settings. So now what do I do? And so it really is, from a developer point of view, you think of the ASP.NET membership, done correctly, mm-hmm. and by someone who's much better at it than the average Joe developer.
Gotcha.
And from an administrator point of view, you rest assured, well, I can manage this directory in a familiar way. I mean, it's users and groups, I get that, and I can enforce user password policies, and I can be sure that people are doing things properly instead of just some random table of passwords that get hacked and then up on the internet.
Yeah, some other developer going through and setting up membership, something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay,
exactly.
So we touched on a few things. We're going to come back to the whole apps and everything.
Yeah, exactly.
This,
yeah.
This is more of this is the reason I wanted to get you on the show here, right? And have this.
We have 3 days, right? Yeah.
And it because it's such a. This is one of those things that it's such a rabbit hole or such a. You know, you get so many different places that this touches, yes. and it gets confusing with all the different terms, right? So, you know, one thing that I see people get confused with is that, you know, a long time ago, when I say a long time, let's think back to like the Silverlight administration of Azure, when we had this thing called ACS, Access Control Service, right? Yeah. Is that still around in the sense of it's deprecated and we're not using it going forward, or is it still around in that, yes, we still use it today?
Yeah, yes, so it's still around. And so we have to introduce yet another concept here before we go too far into that, right? So Active Directory that people are familiar with, I have a computer, it's on a network. That network is then also has an Active Directory domain controller, if you will, with an attribute store and all that information. I log in and that all just works. But there is a while back, they introduced the concept of federated identity. We saw this first in SharePoint 2010, mm-hmm. where I don't necessarily want to log into an Active Directory domain controller that's on my network. I want to talk to some other identity provider is the term that we're throwing out there, right? Mm-hmm. And so there are industry standards around that, and what we see in the Microsoft stack is mostly SAML, Security Assertion Markup Language, and that just says basically, me as an identity provider is going to give you as an identity consumer, mm-hmm. like SharePoint, mm-hmm. here's an XML file that says the person who logged in is Paul, and I verified that it's Paul, and if you trust me, then you should know that it's Paul.
And that XML file, that's the Security Assertion Markup Language.
Yes, they call it a SAML token. Yes, exactly. And so Azure ACS becomes one of those identity providers, a federated identity provider that would then issue a SAML token from Azure based on it validating credentials. And part of what Azure did, when they first introduced it, they made a big splash that you could go to the web interface and say, I want you to allow Facebook logins or Google logins or AOL, whoever, all the various parties, and then you get a token from ACS. Mm-hmm. And then instead of having to keep up with the whole industry at large of all these identity providers. And so that was its initial goal. And there was a lot of work in 2010 release about I need to do live ID login. And it really became much, much more complicated than people really wanted. So it was kind of deprecated in that regard. And so it's still there. And I haven't looked at the roadmap of ACS for a while, but it's still there. And SharePoint Online is still using it. That's who's issuing the tokens, mm-hmm. because that is the service that's doing the federated login, if you will, as opposed to OAuth stuff that we can talk about. So it's still there. You don't see it so much. It's not. There is a tab in the Microsoft Azure portal to manage it, but mostly it happens under the covers for you. You don't have to deal too much with it. But okay. Just the key thing is it's the identity provider, similar to ADFS.
Okay, so it's the identity provider. That's what. So looking at something like Office 365, when a user goes to log in, under the covers, they're using ACS is doing the authentication for them and handing them the token back, the SAML token back.
There's certainly more to it than that, and obviously we don't have insight into the whole service, but yeah, the concept that is correct. But now, in addition, ACS is layered on top of the Azure Active Directory that you see and are familiar with, just like ADFS is layered on top of a domain controller. Mm-hmm. So yes, ACS is involved, but you can manage things by the user page in Office 365 or in Azure. It's the same directory, which is a good thing. You only want a single directory, ideally, to manage. So yeah.
Okay, that helps. Other parts of Azure Active Directory that you think that we might want to touch on here. Well, that was one, but I want to talk. We're going to get into things like ON and ADAL and OpenID Connect and stuff like that. But before we dive into those things, which are a little bit more current, anything else you can think of that we should probably touch on that I'm not thinking of here?
Yes. So since Azure ACS came out, and like I said, that was the SharePoint 2010 timeframe, which would have been late 2009 probably, right? And so obviously the industry has moved to the identity standards, the most popular OAuth, so open authorization, so OAuth. And so Microsoft has done a lot of work in the Azure Active Directory to participate in those standards so it can issue OAuth tokens. And in addition now, as people are moving to cloud-based services, Microsoft wants to be involved in that space. And so they understand that if you have a cloud-based service and you're writing an app and you want to store users, you're going to have some type of facility for people to maintain users. Mm-hmm. So in addition to just having the directory, now they have an API for maintaining it. And that's where this ADAL that you mentioned, the Active Directory Library, I can't remember what the second A stands for, but it's basically an interface for you to add and remove users and add, change group memberships and so on. So there's that part that, that gets involved as well.
So that's not doing any authentication. That's just more of the management of your AD directory.
Yes. So the ADAL, that library, is really around the administration, it's Active Directory Administration Library. And that is about administering the objects in your directory. If you're doing access control, that's ACS. So it's a little bit different. But again, lots of moving parts.
Okay. And then Microsoft's given tools to customers to do things like if you have an on-prem Active Directory and you want to be able to synchronize or syndicate that between the two environments there. They've done stuff to make that work.
Yes, so there's and that's a rapidly moving space as well, too. So obviously, if you're an organization of any size, and even I just said not too long ago, we want one source of users. We want one directory. Mm-hmm. And so Microsoft has a product. The current version is called the Microsoft Azure Active Directory Sync, which is basically a subset of FIM, Identity Management, Federated Identity Management.
That's right.
So you basically
just blanked on the name.
The new version that just came out September or early October will handle multiple local forests, local domains, and help go through, and it will do an import of your directory and into what they call a metaverse, and you can manage that, and you can decide what attributes you're going to push into the cloud if you have the Azure Active Directory. And so that will then allow you to take the credentials that I use when I come into the office, I sit down at my desk, if I log in with Paul and my password, and then I go to some cloud-based service that's relying on the Azure Active Directory, it's Paul with the same password. And end users love that, right? I don't have to remember a second password. More importantly, I don't write a second password on a sticky note and put it somewhere where it's not secure, right? Because they get too many.
Right.
And so you have the gamut. You can do a complete synchronization that basically says, Azure, you're pretty much stupid. You don't do anything. You just, validate the password that I've given you. Mm-hmm. And you can also go the other way and say, Azure will let people, I can turn on self-service password management in the cloud, and changes made in the cloud can then come bi-directionally back into my Active Directory. You can choose as little or as much as you want to do. It's pretty quite customizable, and it works pretty well there. The thing that also gets confusing a lot of people is that, again, remember this Azure Active Directory is a cloud-based directory. If I'm logging in on a PC, I'm not validating. It's not a domain controller. So I've had people say, well, you know what? I want to put a virtual machine up in the cloud and have it authenticate against Azure Active Directory, and you can't do that.
Because it's a machine.
And so what I'm seeing customers do so far is setting up a site-to-site VPN from their internal network to the cloud and putting a read-only domain controller in the cloud, or just saying there's no domain controllers in the cloud, you come in through our tunnel to validate on a virtual machine. Now, there's talk about how Windows 10 might let you do that, but I don't know the server story around that. We'll see how that plays out. But that's another key distinction, is that it's, again, really about cloud platform as a service things, not infrastructure as a service.
Gotcha.
So if that makes sense.
That does make sense. Okay, cool. So, and then you were saying, like, you brought up Windows 10 there. So one of the things that they said about Windows 10 is that I'll be able to have, you were saying having a machine, maybe not having a machine being able to log in against Azure AD, but you could have a user log in from Windows 10 to that exists in an Azure AD.
Yes. So in Windows 8 and 8.1, you can choose to have your Microsoft account be the authentication, the identity, right? So which is the old Live ID or Hotmail ID. And so that will then morph that it could be my Azure Active Directory credential that I log in with instead of, an external one. But then again, that means if I have a distributed workforce and I have they have an Active Directory account and I synchronize the password to the cloud, again, they can call my help desk, I can change their password on site, and then it synchronizes the cloud, they can log into their machine without having to connect to a domain controller to do a password reset.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it'd be a lot cleaner, a lot simpler.
So for organizations that have embraced the cloud or are comfortable with that type of flexibility, so again, it's making the authentication platform as a service.
Yeah, so and one of the things that's cool about this is being able to have your identities from your corporate environment federated up to an Azure AD directory. I love the name, it's Azure AD directory. So it's Azure Active Directory.
That's it. Microsoft Azure Active Directory.
Microsoft Azure Active Directory.
Right. So we're calling it Azure AD.
Oh, Azure AD. So it's not Azure Active Directory Director.
Correct. It's just one.
Oh, I thought there was two. I thought I saw that on the doc somewhere.
Well, you may have. I'm just saying.
ADD. Throw an H in there. Let's have some fun. okay. So, but being able to take your on-prem identities in Azure AD or in your Windows Active Directory that's on-prem, having that federated with or synchronized with your Azure Active Directory, Azure AD, I'll get there. then the developers will be able to build applications that live up in Azure or somewhere else. And when users want to authenticate, we could let them authenticate with their corporate ID, their corporate login, but it's actually authenticating against the federated version or the synchronized version up in Azure AD instead of going back to on-prem and having to some VPN firewall going back to their on-prem environment. Is that correct?
Yes, and actually that we're at that state now. Mm-hmm. So there is a directory in the cloud that has user names and passwords and roles or group membership, if you will, right? And there are applications that can use that for their authentication, the most common being Office 365. Mm-hmm. If you go to the Office 365 admin center, you look at your list of users, those same users exist in an Azure Active Directory tenant. Mm-hmm. And if you have an enterprise agreement, you call Microsoft and say, I have Azure and I have Office 365, they can help you get those linked together. Or if you use the same account to create both, you'll see that, right? But it's not just Office 365. Box will let you authenticate up there. Salesforce will let you authenticate there. And there's 100 different
Smartsheets. I think
there's a massive quantity of platform services offered by many vendors that, again, because they can accept a SAML token mm-hmm. or an OAuth token, and Azure AD can provide those. Now all of a sudden, you're using your Azure AD to log into all those services.
So then your Azure AD turns into being like when you go to a site that says log in with Facebook, log in with Google, log in with Twitter. Now it's also log in with your organization ID, which is your Azure AD user.
Yes, exactly.
Right, which could be federated from on-prem.
So there's two terms I want to talk about there. So it could be synchronized, mm-hmm. which means the password storage and the password comparison happens in the cloud. So that's when I synchronize my account up there, and I'm actually using the Azure Active Directory computers and databases and attribute store to validate the credentials presented to log in. That's okay. One concept. You said the word federated. There's another option I can do. I can tell Azure, I don't want you to do the actual comparison of passwords. I want you to just relay that request back to some service that I have on premises. We're back to that federated identity. We were just talking about how SharePoint can say, oh, go log in over there and come back with a token when you're done. I can do the same thing. So I can turn on federation inside the cloud so that it'll come back to an on-prem or any remote to Azure service. Mm-hmm. Active Directory Federation Services is Microsoft's offering. It's ADFS. Mm-hmm. And so some directory people guys I work with who do directory is their business, mm-hmm. they aren't necessarily comfortable letting Azure do all the login validation.
Hold all the passwords locally. They don't.
Yeah. Correct. So we synchronize the login name up to the cloud and usually an email address. Mm-hmm. And then when I type in that email address on the login screen, I get a browser redirect that comes to some site that I've told Azure. When anything for Shapeline.net tries to log in, I want you to go to this server for login and I'll give you a token back.
Gotcha.
And so that's the federated concept. And so it's still goodness from the end user point of view because it's my same password that I use to log in on my desk.
Gotcha.
And it's a little, it might be different about whether I use an email address or my SAM account name, for mm-hmm. those of you directory people out there, right? So
yeah.
Is it paul@shapeline.net or is it pshafe or whatever? I can decide that. And if I'm redirecting you to a federation server, that typically has a login webpage, and if I'm a web guy, I can customize that, right? I can put, they make it very easy to put your corporate logo in a spot and your own little picture, so you can change the text so they understand that at first I see an Office 365 page or I see a Salesforce page, but when I type in my email address, then all of a sudden I see a page that has my company logo, and I can put the directions in there, say, if you can't log in, call the help desk, or the extension 123, or whatever, I can customize that.
But it's your corporate page.
And I get, yes, exactly, and I can make it as familiar to my users as with their use to, and it kind of lessens the confusion of cloud identity or not. It's the same one.
Gotcha, right? Gotcha.
So synchronization is different than federation. So that's another key concept people need to understand.
So federation is when you're going to hand it off to on-prem and let them do the work, let them do the actual authentication. Synchronization is you effectively have a copy of your account up in Azure AD that is being kept in sync between the two. So when you go to log in, it's not the same account, but for the end user, it's pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, and the other benefit there is if I'm writing a custom application for, you know, expense submissions, and I only want people to approve expense reports if they're a member of a certain group in my Active Directory. If I synchronize that group membership to the cloud, now my cloud-based app doesn't have to call home to validate if you're a member of that group. I can ask Azure Active Directory. So I can make them come back to log in, mm-hmm. but it's a little less risky to say, are you a member of a group in the cloud? So that way I can, you know, improve my performance by doing that.
That's true, yeah. That's pretty cool. And then it gives you the ability to sit there and push stuff up into the cloud, not having to put it on-prem because that's where your directory is. Not having to maintain a VM in the cloud to sit there and be able to log into and have that point-to-point kind of...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And you can scale that as much as you need to, right? And another discussion I had not so long ago is, you know, people are remote, but they're often disconnected. So federated login, which happens in the browser, they call that passive, it ends up with a cookie. So you can decide what's your cookie expiration. Maybe a 20-minute cookie expiration is not good if they're disconnected. Maybe you want 24 hours so they can log in once in the morning and not have to do it over there. So you get all those kinds of choices.
Gotcha. That's pretty cool. That's pretty powerful. So let's pivot a bit. Let's talk a little bit about Office 365, how Office 365 uses it. I guess I shouldn't say we pivoted because we've already thrown it in there a few times, right? And then we want to talk a little bit before we wrap up here about some of like the development technologies and stuff and how developers could take advantage of these things. Because I know, for me, until very recently, it was very confusing. It makes a little more sense, honestly, since I talked to you last night about it, it makes a little more sense. So Office 365, my understanding is, and you touched on it, is that, you know, when I sign up for an Office 365 account for my corporate tenant, right, I'm gonna get an Azure AD set up under the covers. Regardless if I have an Azure subscription or not, I'm going to get that subscription. It's gonna be created for me. I don't see it or anything, but there is a way for me to go in, create an Azure subscription, and even if one's been created before the other one, or vice versa, being the two things I'm talking about, being 365 tenant or an Azure subscription, there is a way for me to go through and marry those together so that I have the same directory in my Azure subscription is the same directory that's in my Office 365. So when I go look at my users in the directory in Azure AD, and then I go look at the users in the admin portal for Office 365, I will see the exact same people.
Yes, and so, it can be very confusing. Mm-hmm. So when you create an Office 365 tenancy, you provide an account. If you use the same account when you provision your Azure tenancy, things all look nice. Mm-hmm. But that never happens in organizations, right? Because Joe in the sales department pulled out a credit card and got Office 365, and then the IT department comes along later and it's kind of a mess, right? Yep. So there is a wizard you can go through in Azure. And so I can say, I want to add a second directory to my Azure tenancy. Mm-hmm. So we keep saying Azure Active Directory like it's one thing, it's not. So just like in Azure, you can have dozens of objects of any kind. Mm-hmm. A directory is a kind of object. So I can have multiple directories in my tenancy.
Right.
So I tell Azure, I want to add a tenancy. And one of the options is it's an existing Office 365 tenancy. And then you log in with your Office 365 Global Administrator account to prove that you have it.
Right.
And then they will, in your Azure management portal, you'll see two directories. One is the first Azure one that was created, and one is the Office 365 one. Gotcha. And we typically tell people, you know what, delete the original one, because people are going to do the wrong. If you have two, they'll pick the wrong one half the time, right?
I'm one of those people. I did that same thing. Yes. I had signed up originally for Azure before I had 365, but I signed up using my Microsoft account, which happens to be my email address, right? And then I go over to Office 365 and sign up for a 365 tenant, and then I change the domain to use my personal domain, and which happened to also be my email address. So I have a Microsoft account and an organizational account that have the exact same email address login.
Yeah.
I finally have changed the passwords on them. They used to be the same, right? But I finally have got two different passwords on it. And to go through and set that up so that my organization account was the global admin and the main and the primary for all my Azure subscriptions. And so I'd have a single directory, a single login that had God rights on every single thing. It took some time to do it. And it's scary as hell because it's one of those things that if you feel like if you get it wrong, then all of a sudden you just assign some random object that you can't log into anymore. It now has admin rights over my Azure subscription over my 365 subscription.
It is.
Terrifying.
But when you get it working, it's helpful. Like, so my,
that's beautiful.
My Microsoft account is Hotmail, right? Yeah, I got a gray beard. I had my address at Hotmail, not Outlook. So I actually had my Office 365 was initially provisioned with my Hotmail account. And then in Azure, I did it with my org account. And once you get it set up, now if I happen to hit Azure and I have a cookie from my account, it figures out that, oh, that's really the same Azure tenancy. So I can log in and administer my Azure tenancy with either account now that I've got it set up.
Yeah, that's same.
So, but again, there is a wizard that goes through that. And I think the instructions were pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
You know, granted, I might know more about it than most, but yeah, it is doable.
It was, the one thing I did find that was a little confusing when I did it is that there was a part when I was trying to add the global admin user, there was something I had not checked to show the users from the other directory, because I had two directories, right?
Okay, yeah.
I had the default directory that I had originally in Azure, and then I had the Office 365 directory that I could then see in Azure, but I wanted that to be primary and wanted the global admin from 365 to be the Azure subscription admin. And I couldn't see that. All it would show was my one account, showed the little Microsoft logo next to it and not the little blue card, right?
Yeah.
I was like, I couldn't find it. So finally, it was just like, I was complaining about the docs, and it's just because I had not selected which ones do you want to include in this filter. And I was like, I only had one thing checked.
Oh, yeah.
So, but I think that was more of a me problem than it is a, that's
yeah,
a
and when it's unfamiliar, you, yeah. It's,
and but it's direct security and directory stuff. It's just, it's, I do want to say it's scary because you're afraid if it's one of those things that if you screw up, you know, it's like the question with SQL database, you know, are you sure you want to drop this database? It's like, let me make sure which one
I'm
dropping.
Exactly. Hold on. Yeah. Yeah. And to make things even more confusing, when you have a directory, you typically identify a user using a UPN, user principal name, and a user principal name typically looks like an email address, and an email address has a user part and a domain part. So I can have a single directory, but have many different domains as part of that directory, right? So if you have multiple domains, like a .com or a .ca or a .es, they can all be multiple domains in the same directory, or they could be separate. It really can be,
That's where mine's confusing, right? I'm posting mail for my mom and my dad and my wife. They all have different domains.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So 365, you can take advantage of this with the users and having them both in directories. And one of the things that's cool about that then is that let's say I have an application that I want to write, some ASP.NET application. It can run over in Azure. I can set up the authentication where they log into Azure AD to get a SAML token, a credential, a token for that user. And then that same token, because it's coming from the same directory, could be used to get into Office 365 and do some stuff and provide single sign-on, essentially.
Yeah, and that's the work that Microsoft has been doing recently in the part of the big announcements that happened recently in Barcelona is that now there is a single source to authenticate users amongst other things. And we said Azure AD can have users in groups. You can add an application into that. And that application can do a couple things. One thing that most people expect is you can say, I want to use federated login for this application. So that's still coming back on-prem, but instead of the token going to Office 365, it goes to your app.
Ah, I see.
And then in addition, now they've extended other attributes of the application object, if you will, right? So I have a user and I have a first name and a last name and a UPN and so on. For an application, I can have a set of rights, and this is what you'll see in the tooling now that they've announced, where I want to grant permission to the mailbox or whatever. So those are all attributes added to the application object in the cloud directory that it now, since it's all in the same directory, it all works together.
Gotcha.
And that's what facilitates so let's go take a step back. When we were doing SharePoint apps, SharePoint 2013 came out, the one we wrote a SharePoint app, and to launch that app, we had to go to site contents in a site collection and click on the icon there. We initiate that conversation, if you will, from SharePoint. Now that apps can be put into the directory, I'm not married to having to start in SharePoint. So if I just have a web app that does whatever, I don't have to tell people go to SharePoint first and come back. I can just go to my app and say, hey, log in using the same directory they did in SharePoint.
Yeah.
Get the token. And then if I happen to need something in SharePoint, talking to a guy at lunch today who was complaining about storing files in a server database because of his whatever app, I said, using SharePoint, and he wasn't, right? But now you can. So that's where you get all the goodness.
And that's not just the app authenticating. That could be the user authenticating.
Absolutely.
Or both, right?
Yeah, exactly. All those concepts we learned about in SharePoint still apply. It's just now the token's being issued by, the token was always issued by Azure, but now it's got more.
It's more visibility
more
control. And so, okay, so let me roll back a few things. So you said you were talking a little bit about, this. I love this topic because there's so much to it. And it's so cutting. It's bleeding edge kind of stuff. It's always not changing. It's always, I'd say it's always improving. It seems like it's changing, but it's just because more stuff is getting added to it. So, all right, you mentioned a little bit about the permissions associated with the app, right? So first, actually, before I do that, one thing I always like to clarify with people is that when they go in and they create an app inside of Azure, so it's when you go in, you log in your Azure management portal, you go to your Azure AD, when you get into it, you have tabs for users, groups, and you also have one now for applications. And when you go in and you create a new application, it's going to go in and prompt you for, you know, what kind of an app is it? What's the name of it? A couple other things like, you know, where should we send you back once you've authenticated the reply URL? But then when you get in there, you're given an ID. They call it a client ID. And then they, you're also going to create a secret or a key. You get a key associated with it as well. And the key is good for like 1 or 2 years. Those two things, I think people get confused by it. They're like, well, what are these two special things here? I'm using, and it's, to me, it's always just where you think application, think user, where it says yep. ID and key, think username, password.
Yep, it's exactly.
Same, it's the
exactly.
same concept.
Yep, I refer to it as an app password all the time instead of a secret, because then people say, oh, it's a password. Maybe yeah. I should be careful with that thing.
Yeah, well, it looks confusing as heck anyway. It's an encrypted string, so you want to, right?
Yeah.
So, and then the other part too, you talked a little bit about the permission. So if we scroll farther down on that same page where I'm managing the app, at the bottom here, we can choose some different permissions, and there's different permissions that they've already set up by default. So there's one for your directory where you can say, this user can sign in, you can interrogate their...
This app can.
I'm sorry, correct?
Yes.
Because the app and the user are two different things.
Absolutely, right? Remember, apps are now a full class citizen in identity in these days.
That's right. Okay, so the different permissions that the app can have is that one, it can interrogate information about that user, allow users to log in and find information about them and other people in the directory. It can talk to Exchange, Office 365 Exchange yep. Online, and do things like look at their mailbox, their calendar, their contacts, and all that stuff. It can also go to SharePoint, and it can talk to their, look at their OneDrive files. It can look at sites.
But
then that list, they presumably Microsoft will add additional things to that.
Yeah, and I don't know this for a fact, but I cannot imagine that someday I'll be able to put my own things in there.
So I read somewhere where either you can either do that today through some special PowerShell thing, or it's something that is coming where you would add your own, say these are the different permissions my app can have.
Yeah, so what ends up happening, right? So right today, if I have an app and I want to have different roles of users in my app, I have approved, I have, you know, expense submitters and I have expense approvers, I need to create two roles or two groups to do that today. I fully expect to have that same model available to me so that when I go into Azure and I create a new application, I can say these are the roles I want my application to allow, and so people can then, you know, administrators can let users do that. But then again, sometimes I don't necessarily, my example may not be the best, because when the experience right now, when I want to use an app, I have to grant consent for that app to read my mail.
Right, as a user.
Right, so as an expense report application creator, I don't want every user to say, yeah, I'm allowed to approve my own expense report.
Right, right.
So you have to kind of think through, just because I can do that, is it appropriate? It really gets kind of, you got to understand what context are we in, the user context, administrator context, and so on.
Maybe
so
you need two different apps, one for an administrator, one for the admin, and then it's like, doesn't matter what rights the user has, the app is only designed to do these things.
I think most organizations will end up with some of those attributes being specified, but wanting the ability to say, don't show this to the user, just use this default setting. So as an organization, I can push out this expense app, and I can then write a rule that says, if you're a member of Group X, then you get this permission. I think eventually we'll get to that part. And so I think there'll be a lot more administrative tweaks and knobs. Just like you have an on-prem AD now, when you load the Active Directory users and groups, there's millions of tabs.
Yeah.
I think we'll see more and more of that as the cloud matures.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that one of the things that's nice about this too is that now, given this ability, when these applications that we're creating in Azure AD, these are the apps that developers have been creating for Office 365. When you want to be able to create an app and say, I want this app to have permissions to work with managed metadata or work with search or whatever, or do different things, that token, when I do something that's going to authenticate against Azure AD and obtain that access token, just like Azure AD gives me a SAML token for a user, I can use that access token to go get into SharePoint to do something. So like you said earlier, we can create apps inside of Azure AD, have a full-blown ASP.NET MVC website, have people log in, have apps log in, authenticate, get those tokens from Azure AD, but never do anything over in the SharePoint side, but that app has been configured to say, yes, it can talk to sites or site collections, and then I could use those tokens that I obtain to go in my application, to go straight over to Office 365 to treat like first-class citizen, like you said at the very beginning or earlier on, that we don't have to start from 365 anymore. We can start from the Azure side now.
Right, and all those pieces are there, which people don't always realize. So when Azure AD first came out, they had the ability for me to go in Visual Studio, right-click on a project and say, you know, there was an identity and access control wizard in Visual Studio that did nothing except wire up an app to do federated login to Azure Active Directory. Mm-hmm. And now with the new Office 365 tools, we're doing the whole permission bit. Mm-hmm. But that login is still there. So eventually, I hope the tools kind of merge. It, you know, again, it's a fast-moving space. But so all those pieces that you're talking about, they're already there that can be done today. You just have to, you know, find the right pieces and do it, and it works great.
Cool.
And then eventually you'll be able, yeah, so you can have a, we didn't talk about, but the app launcher was another big announcement in Barcelona. In SharePoint, I can click in the upper left, and I can see all the apps, Exchange, Outlook, whatever, and I can put custom apps in there by adding them to this directory. Well, there is an equivalent page in Azure. Mm-hmm. I can go portal.azure.com. I think, no, that's the wrong URL. I'll look it up. There's a page there where I can have log in as a user and see all boxes for all the apps that are I'm allowed to launch using my Azure credentials.
That's right. I've seen that too.
Exchange Online's there. SharePoint's on there. I can put Salesforce, Dropbox, put my customs apps in there as well. So, you know, if the Office 365 isn't what you want people to be their home experience, you don't have to go there.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. It's really cool where they're going with this whole process. So another thing too that I want to talk about is a little bit on the developer side, right? So there's a few different terms and stuff that I find that are, well, to me, were confusing as hell, right? So we talked about ADAL a little bit, right? Yep. So Active Directory Application Layer.
Administration Library,
okay, yeah. So and that's the part that we can use to go through and manage the directory, not do the authentication, but manage the directory and the contents of it.
Yeah.
Okay, so another thing that I've heard that's been discussed a bit at, that was discussed actually a lot over at TechEd Barcelona back in a couple weeks ago, I guess it was in October of 2014, was OpenID Connect. And the new support for OpenID Connect and how SharePoint or Azure supports it, Azure AD supports it, and SharePoint can take advantage of it. So you talk a little bit about this, or?
Yeah, just a little is all I can talk about this. So at a high level, we've talked already about how I'm going to be having a token being sent to somebody. Mm-hmm. And so when we were talking about the context of users, we can have a SAML token being sent to, you know, that represents the identity of a user. And we have OAuth tokens that represent the identity of an application and or a user, right? OpenID Connect is very similar. It's a different acronym, if you will, around a similar concept. So I haven't gone in depth into this, but at my high level is, you know, it's just another way of doing things. OAuth isn't as secure as, you know, on-prem logins, right? It's still tokens, and there's some issues that some people have trouble with. And so my read on that is the Azure team is just saying, if there's a new standard, we're going to be there because we have the attribute store. We can validate who you are. We'll give you whatever you ask for.
Right. There was a session by a couple of people at TechEd Barcelona, and the presenter, Mauricio Ordóñez, who's on the one of the SharePoint program managers, one of the main engineers there, and working around the identity space for the Office 365 side, but works really closely with the Azure side as well. The way he was describing it is that it's kind of like a wrapper, like you said. You get a SAML token that contains all the claims about the user. You get an access token that's going to be for the application. But what we don't have is something that kind of wraps both of them together. And what OpenID Connect is, it's going to give us that access token. When I go to authenticate, I can say, give me an access token and give me a claim to go wrap up together.
Yeah, right. Because in the scenario we've been talking, it's multiple conversations between your app and the identity provider and the consuming application. So, yeah. That's great. So they say, I know I'm going to need three things. Give them to me all at once instead of having to come knock on the door three times. That's
right.
I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's one thing that they were talking about in with respect to like Office 365 APIs. Another thing too that this one tripped me up a lot. Right. And it's something called OWEN. It's an open technology, and I know. And I was on a project recently where the instructions were to stop using the ADAL way of doing stuff and use OWEN instead. And I was like, okay, but I honestly didn't have as much understanding of exactly like what and why I was doing that. I knew, well, other than customer said do it because we'll send you a check,
which is a good reason to do many things.
Exactly, yeah. I got it going. I have no idea if I just compromised some nuclear codes or anything like that. That's not my concern, right? I have an indemnification clause in my contract. No, but so seriously though, my client was not the U.S. Defense Department. So what can you describe a little bit about what OWEN is? What it is, what it does, is it replacing something? Is it just another way of doing something?
Yes, so there was a lot of talk about OWEN, which is O-W-I-N, and I don't know what that stands for off the top of my head. And there was a Project Katana, which was part of the ASP.NET team And part of what has been happening is when ASP.NET first came out, we had the pipeline and you could write handlers and modules and pages that interact with that ASP.NET pipeline. And now as we're moving forward and you get into, you know, MVC really kind of peels some of the layers off. It's not a big black box that manages session state for you automatically, is just like VB used to do. It's really more of the core pieces of the ASP.NET pipeline. And so the Project Katana and this Owen framework is more about letting a developer swap out things or add things to the ASP.NET pipeline to do specific tasks that they want. And when you think about a page lifecycle, well, a classic example is that when SharePoint apps first came out, we got Token Helper for a provided host or app. And in the page load or the page pre-init, they were doing some validation of the token. But you can kind of argue, why should I have to be putting authentication or authorization code in my page? Because if I have 100 pages, that's 100 times I got to do that.
Right, right.
So if I can push that further down in the stack and let ASP.NET say, you know what, if they're not authorized, don't even come call my page because they don't belong here.
Right.
So
like do it at the handler level kind of a thing.
That's how I interpret it. I'm sure that, you know, you get an Owen expert on who you might have a better explanation. But that's my understanding, is I'm trying to get that code out of a page or out of a controller and more into the framework and validate it where it belongs.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. So it's more handling the authentication at the first initiation of the request. And if they don't have the token, then you can send them off to go get a token.
And that sending. So the way I understand is, right, so ADAL is a library. And so from Paul's point of view, why should I write the code to send you off to get a token? That's part of the library. So I don't know that you're necessarily swapping out ADAL with Owen. I think maybe you're calling ADAL from lower in the stack. That's just, you know, seems to be how I can explain it, gain some traction.
Well, and that's similar to my understanding too, because I think when we go in, when you, well, I should say similar to my understanding, but just to be clear, you cleared this up a lot for me as we were standing around having a beer at a reception last night. And then today I was working on my project and all of a sudden they're like, we need to add some error handling and stuff in here. And the one exception they said, do you want to make sure you handle in the Owen authentication piece is the ADAL exception. I'm like, okay, so Owen the wrapper around ADAL to be able to kind of, because ADAL is exposing an exception to Owen that I need to be able to trap when authentication fails or something like that.
Yeah,
so that's what seems like what's going on. But yeah, so it looks like Owen is, so the way you described it, I mean, Owen sounds like it's more targeted just for ASP.NET MVC. Is it not something that I would use for the authentication, like in a console app, if I'm going to one far extreme?
I believe Owen applies only to the ASP.NET stack.
Okay.
But obviously the libraries, you know, there's portable libraries for various platforms, but that's my understanding.
Okay.
Longtime associate of mine likes to say, I know that's right unless I'm wrong.
I know that's right unless I'm wrong. And then what was the other one that he said recently?
Observationally correct. Yes. Yeah. That information is observationally correct. Yeah. Which means it looks like it's right.
May not be right, but it sure is acting like it. Cool. Well, man, we've gone on for quite a bit here on this.
I'm sorry if I blabbed too much.
No. This is exactly what I was hoping for. I'm looking at this. I mean, we're sitting around 48 minutes of discussion.
Okay, So, identity's been one of those things that kind of interests me for a long, long time. So, I get going. So.
Well, it's one of those topics that I think is, to me, when you look at OAuth and authentication and identity and all stuff, it's a very... I call it a very heady topic because it's very hard to put your fingers on it and to draw the whole thing out. It's easy to kind of show how the flow goes, but it's also easy, like the very first time I first started looking at this stuff, like for OAuth 2, compared to what a traditional authentication model we would look at, you stand back and you hear all these levels of trust and like going, is this really secure? This looks pretty easy to hack. And it's like, oh no, it's all based on a trust, and someone has to establish that first trust to say, I trust the person that's building that token. That token has signed with a certificate. The only person that could have built that token is someone that had the private key that I'm trusting. So you can't spoof it. You can't.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's exactly the same. But who do you trust, right?
Yeah.
So exactly.
It took a little bit of time for me to wrap my brain around that.
So you didn't trust all the platform yet?
No, I didn't. I did not. And in fact, I'll be completely frank, is that I was teaching the OAuth security and stuff for a lot of the app stuff for a good many months. I won't say how long it was. And people understood it, but I don't think I had a firm grasp of what I was saying. I could repeat it quite well, and I could answer many questions quite well, but I didn't feel like I had I had the script. You could call the help desk, and I could read the script back to you, but if you went off script, I'm like, I don't really know.
You know, that's what you see. I mean, part of the maturation as a developer, people, right? So if you look at a sample and you write the code and it works, life is good. But when it doesn't work, how do you figure it out?
Yeah.
And so I think... hey, listeners, bookmark this thing. So when identity doesn't work and you need to figure out why it's not working, sometimes you need to know what's supposed to happen and why it's happening. So that's kind of...
Yeah. One of the best demonstrations of it, too, to really show how this whole process worked, I saw a guy just recently sit down with a browser and Fiddler and went through the entire authentication process, but used the browser to initiate like the first request and then basically did everything in Fiddler and was showing how the process went. It's really insightful. For developers, it's really interesting if you pop open Fiddler, clear the whole session, go try and hit an application that uses Azure AD, or go try and hit SharePoint Online, or go try and hit a SharePoint app. And the first time you do it, just watch the requests that go by, get rid of all the images, get rid of all the scripts that come by and everything like that. Look at the 200s, look at the 401s.
Yes,
look at the 200s that come across. Look at the 500, well, hopefully no 500s. Yeah. Look at the responses. Yeah. It is interesting to see all the data that goes back and forth because it's all client over HTTP, because it's all HTTPS and TCP over TCP/IP and all that stuff based, it's really easy to have use something like Fiddler to see how all the work is being done.
Yeah, exactly. So now I'm 90% sure that the Microsoft Virtual Academy has a recording that does a very similar activity. Uh-huh. And it's very instructful because, let's take a step back, when you're doing like all the Office 365 stuff that was announced, right? There's a set of libraries that you can add to a ASP.NET, MVC app or WebForm app. There's also a library for Windows application, Windows Store apps, if you will, Xamarin, all those. Under the covers, it's all talking from a machine over the TCP/IP to Azure. So it's all the same stuff. So Fiddler in a browser, you can see that traffic, but it's the same traffic that happens if you're in a Windows Store app. The difference is instead of a browser redirect, you get a dialogue where you type in your password. But under the covers, it's the same stuff.
Same thing, yeah.
So understanding what's happening there and what causes this thing or that thing to happen gets you way down the path of trying to figure out a problem.
Yeah, mapping out like the sequence diagram. So when I first started playing with this, I found, you watch everything going on in Fiddler and it's like, I can pick this apart. And if I pick this apart, I can understand what pieces are going, and then I kind of tweak little values here and there, and I can see how to manipulate it. It was really useful because then I've got this hand-drawn thing. It's on my whiteboard behind my desk. I've got a picture on my laptop somewhere where it shows all the pieces going back and forth. It's really cool to watch it from the developer side.
And here's a real-life debugging scenario. It'll take us a little time. So I was at a client, and we set up directory sync. So we were synchronizing up to Azure AD, and off we go. And then it comes time to do – they were doing federated login. So we then flipped the switch to say we want to do – for this domain, we're going to do federated login. And we go to the Azure, type in the password, redirect on SubPrem, we could see the logo, type in the passwords, and it would fail, give us a strange error, what's going on. And so, again, on a developer machine, I cracked open Fiddler and looked at the HTTPS traffic. Don't do that on a production server, people. and so we looked, and what ended up happening was the claim being returned back from our on-prem federation server to Azure didn't match what it expected. And as it turned out, when we did the synchronization, you pick which attributes to push to the cloud. There's a drop-down of all your Active Directory attributes. There's only a couple hundred, right?
Yeah.
And sure enough, when we done that, it's like hit the one right below or right above the one that we wanted. So the attribute that was stored in the cloud that it was expected to match from my login
didn't match.
So Azure said, you're not who you said you were, because these, right? And I didn't know that until we used Fiddler to say, what are we sending back up to the cloud? And we said, well, that looks right.
Yeah.
Why is that going on? So we started backtracking. So that you never know where that Fiddler understanding is going to come into play, because like, what's going on?
It's a super powerful tool. And I think especially today with so much of the web stuff, with so much client over HTTP, it's a tool that, I mean, I still feel I touch about 30 or 40% of it. I mean, I can use the composer and the inspector and the filters and stuff like that, but I know there's so much more stuff that's incredibly powerful with it that I want to dig into. But I still wish they really had a good way to just say, filter out everything but the real traffic back and forth.
Well,
kill the tunnels, kill the images, kill anything that's, I mean,
I'm sure that extension language they have in Fiddler, I'm sure can do that. It's just, who's got time to figure that out?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, we got a couple of the things where, like, I know Kirk Evans has gone.
We should buy Kirk a couple beers, maybe he'll do it for us.
We totally should. Kirk's got, so the guy who works in the Azure Center of Excellence for Microsoft, it was an old SharePoint guy, and now he's mostly on the Azure side. He built a, I guess a Fiddler extension, is what you call it. You can grab it, you can put it into Fiddler, and it has a new tab where it will decode the token. The JWT token that comes back, which is part of the whole, like, access token and stuff, and so you can see all the contents of it. It's all in clear text. It's just base 64 encoded. So he just made it simple for us to pull it out.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah. You know, and that thing, he wrote that and he didn't know how to post it to GitHub. And so he gave me the code. And so the account, it looks like I'm the one that wrote it,
yeah.
Right? So it's on my GitHub account to go grab that. And I'm like, no, Kirk's the one that did this.
I'm finding that's common in the web these days, right? So one guy knows how to do GitHub, one guy knows how to do tokens, one guy knows their identity. And between the three of us, we get a working application.
What a great sample. Who's going to take the credit where does it go? Awesome. Hey, Paul, thanks a lot for taking the time to go through all this with me today. Where can people find you? Like, you know, what kind of stuff are you up to these days? I mean, we're going to put your Twitter and your blog and stuff up on the show notes and everything.
Okay, So my email address is paul@chafeline.net. Feel free to shoot me a message. That's rather busy these days, so it may be a delay getting back to you. But, yeah, so I'm still a consultant working with a bunch of different large firms trying to do these SharePoint migrations and stuff like that. And my website is at www.chafeline.net. And as a fact, tomorrow I'm doing a session on Design Manager, and I'm going to take my SharePoint 2010 master page SharePoint site and use the Office 365 to try to change the look and feel, because I'm tired of paying a license for SharePoint 2010 on-prem. So I'm going to try to use the public-facing SharePoint Office 365 site, just because my website is just a bunch of articles and maybe a blog. So interesting to see how that works. So you can, if it doesn't look all as pretty as my designer wants, it's my fault, not hers.
The session didn't go as well.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's, you can get a hold of me, and I don't have the speaking engagements. This is the last one I have. But for this year, obviously, and next year's kind of in the air. So, but I will rekindle the blog now. I'm going to rebrand it and keep up there. So that's the best place to find me.
Also, independent consultants. You do. You know, people can come to you if they're looking for. If they hear this identity stuff, they're like, "That's the guy we want." Then they definitely give you a call.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. As an independent, I partner up with a bunch of different firms to help big customers, small customers, stuff like that. So yeah, certainly, lately it's been, I'm happy to take your email, and maybe I might be saying, well, you really need this guy to help you because it's that area. So I'm happy to facilitate that conversation as well, whatever people need.
You're very much like me, where someone comes to you and says, can you do this? I'm like, nope, but I know somebody that can. Like, don't you want the business? I'm like going,
I'd love it. Well, or I know it, but I don't have time, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So
it's a good problem to have. But
It is. Yeah. And then obviously, being a Chicagoan, I do want to take a quick moment to make a plug, if you will. If you're coming to Chicago for Ignite and you're a developer, a bunch of us are planning a little hackathon the weekend before Ignite to try to just to spur Azure cloud-based development. And there's some angel investor firms who are going to be involved. So look for Chicago's Next. It will be coming out soon. And if you're going to be in town early and you want to, you know, spend time writing some code over the weekend in downtown Chicago, there's an opportunity coming for you.
Yeah, it'd be cool. I mean, it'd be fun to. I knew that was coming. I know the guy that you're, that you're working with on it. And I'll tell you that it would be interesting to see what we can come up with on that weekend, especially that knowing that Build is the week before, you know, there's gonna be a lot of epic stuff that gets announced that week, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So who knows, right?
Yeah,
probably a whole bunch of guys probably coming to Ignite from Build, maybe showing up with Surface 4s that they got for free.
I hope not. That would make me jealous because I don't think I'm gonna be able to make it to Build. But
no, I really want to go to Build too. Two conferences back to back, that ain't gonna happen.
Well, three for us.
Yeah, we're looking at a London conference the week before Build. Right, so you go from Chicago, I go from Florida over to London, then San Francisco. You get to go home back to Chicago.
That sounds almost as crazy as spending 12 days going across the UK.
Who in the world would do that in a bus or something, right? Why in the world would you do that? That was a fun trip, though.
Yeah, so cool. Thanks for having me on, and happy to chat about SharePoint all the time. So
cool, thanks a lot, Paul. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text. We'll record it as a WAV or an MP3 file and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Eric by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can find us on Facebook searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.